The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
Most of the time when we are sick and need medical care, we end up taking pills or perhaps an injection of medicine to get well. Well, in this edition of UWM Today, we're going to explore another form of healing, one that might surprise you. It's called phototherapy, the use of light to heal. Joining us in the studio is Chukwuka Enwamika, Distinguished Professor and Dean of UWM's College of Health Sciences, and Janice Els, Professor of Biomedical Science in the College of Health Science. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you with us. We didn't bring too much light into the studio today, but we're going to talk about it. And Dean, let's start with you, this whole notion of light being used to heal the body. It's surprising.
Tom, thank you very much. The use of light for therapeutic purposes has been with mankind for so many years, thousands of years. As a matter of fact, you could actually date it back to the ancient Egyptian civilization when they used light to heal wounds and also to do some diagnostic tests such as diabetes. For example, I know this will come to you as a surprise. They would collect urine from individuals that they felt had diabetes, pour it out in the open sunlight, and as it dried up, the sugar in the urine begins to attract flies, and when flies converge on the urine, then they know that somebody has diabetes. Not only that, various ethnic groups all over the world have used light in one way or the other, or at least recognize the value of sunlight in keeping human health. They worship the sun, they venerated the sun. Even Native Americans here in North America did the same thing too.
And so phototherapy in medicine today takes it to another level.
Exactly. So what has happened is that with the evolution of technology, we are now able to harness certain wavelengths of light, not using the entire spectrum of sunlight, which, as you know, some of it is inimical and injurious to the body. But with the evolution of technology, in particular with the development of lasers and LEDs, we can now select certain wavelengths that have certain therapeutic effects on the body. And I know you're going to get into the use of near-infrared light, red light, and blue light. So I'll wait until then to explain some more about this.
Yeah, and for our listeners' benefit, there actually are two different approaches to using different color lights, and we want to jump into that in a bit, but we want to bring Janice into the conversation. Janice, you've been working with light for some time in your own research, haven't
right.
you?
Right. I've been working with light for 15 years now, and I trained actually as a pharmacologist, so prior to that I was working with drugs, and it was an interesting change to move from traditional therapeutic approaches with drugs to working with light. But interestingly enough, we certainly know that light is necessary for vitamin D synthesis. So light therapy, light is very important in this particular latitude because of the long dark nights. Light therapy for seasonal affective disorder is also understood.
Yeah, I've worked with people who actually have these light boxes at their desk because
yes.
During the winter months, for some, it really, really brings them down.
It makes a big difference. And that took a while to be accepted. There was someone at NIH who worked on that, and it took a long time to actually have it accepted.
I'm really curious. You started studying pharmaceuticals, and then you moved to light. What prompted you to make this leap?
Well, I was studying a model of blindness, and a colleague of mine at the Medical College of Wisconsin, Harry Whalen, asked me to come over and talk about these organelles in the cell, mitochondria, because we were doing some work on what would help them work better, and they're the energy-producing components of the cell. And he was pointing out some work that they were doing, that he was doing with light, for wound healing. with patients that were being treated with bone marrow replacement, pediatric patients. When they're given bone marrow replacements, they are given either total body irradiation or very high doses of chemotherapeutic agents. And in the process, what happens is they develop sores in their entire gastrointestinal tract and their mouths. And they were treating these patients with the lights on the sides of their mouths, and the sores were healing. And I was astounded. And I suggested, since he had talked about the mechanism being involving stimulating these mitochondria, I said, well, I have a poison, a system that produces blindness in an animal model that intoxicates these mitochondria. And in a perfect world, if I shine this red light on these animals, they shouldn't go blind. And to my amazement, and it truly was my amazement, they didn't. So that was the beginning of it. Epiphany moment when I started looking into light and I started suspending disbelief about light actually being a therapeutic modality.
Chikuka, how about you? When did you first become attracted to the study of light and healing?
It was actually in 1986 when a colleague of mine visited my office. At that time, I was with the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio. And he said to me, now, what are you going to do for your research? And I said, well, my PhD work was looking at the healing of tendons and how we can make tendons and ligaments to heal faster. And he said, I have something to propose to you. You should try laser therapy. And as in those days, they called it laser therapy, not knowing that even LEDs can do the same thing. And then next I knew, I came back from teaching one day, and I had a stack of articles, research articles, left behind by him. And he had a note on it: when you read these things, you become excited about light therapy. So I read the articles and realized that there was a lot going on, but there was a lot that was unknown. So we wrote a proposal to the VA, Research and Development Office, and we got funded for it. And we started exploring. And lo and behold, we were surprised that with light therapy, phototherapy, you can actually get tendons to heal faster and stronger. And in those days, that was a major, major health problem, because orthopedic surgeons, upon repairing tendons, would immobilize the limb, especially with the big tendons like the Achilles tendon. They would immobilize the limb for as long as 8 weeks. And by the time the cast was removed, the entire muscle was atrophied. The joints became so stiff, patient could hardly move.
So while fixing one problem, you create another.
You create another, a lot of complications. And so getting the tendon to heal faster and stronger early enough would then help to limit the duration of time that you have to put the limb in a cast, and therefore permitting early motion and early movement and preventing all of those complications, such as muscle atrophy, joint stiffness, weakening of the body and all that. So we showed that this worked. And then if you combine it with some form of exercise, then the patient can begin to engage in normal activities sooner. So this was the early work that I did before we moved on to looking at diabetic wounds, and then now we're looking at the effect of blue light.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about the difference between blue light research and red light research. And so, Janice, why don't we begin with you? Which is your favorite color?
Well, I'm interested in far red light and near infrared light, so the red light research, mostly because that's it penetrates the skin. It actually the tissue is almost invisible to it. The light will actually get into the tissue, and it acts on, as I said, sort of my favorite part of the cell, which is this mitochondria that makes a lot of energy, and that turns on a whole series of responses in the cell that are protective. And we first saw it in this model of blindness, And we saw that it protected against the induction of blindness. And then we went on to actually look at animal models of retinal disease rather than a toxin-induced blindness. And looking at a disease called retinitis pigmentosa, which blinds 1 in 4,000 people and causes a loss of central vision in these individuals. There's an animal model, which is where I focus most of my work, that has exactly the same disease, the same mutation, the same change that happens in 12% of the people who get retinitis pigmentosa. So we studied that model, treated it with light. And the amazing thing about this light treatment is it's not, you don't have to have these animals living under this light. You treat them for 90 seconds once a day for 14 days and then look at how well you've protected them against the blindness. And we showed that we protected their vision. We protected the structure of the eye, and we can do a lot of this using the same techniques that you use to measure function in people. So we can measure electrical activity in the eye. We can actually go in with imaging techniques, very state-of-the-art imaging techniques, and look at the structure of the retina, and it's preserved. And we can look at energy metabolism in the retina as well, and with a colleague at UWM, Masaranji, and found that that's preserved. So we were very excited about that.
So let me ask you, you're using red light, and as you said at the beginning, the red light penetrates. It gets under the skin and,
yes,
and can go into the tissue underneath. What sort of delivery system do you have to get that light to the problem area? Is it a laser, or is it like a light bulb? What kind of instrument would
right.
it look like?
We use a light-emitting diode array, and this is actually made, the one that we've used is made by a Wisconsin company, Quantum Devices, small company in Barneveld. And it's a very elaborate or very nicely built system. It was built for the military. The money was funded by the Department of Defense to develop this light array. It puts out, at the wavelength that we use, 10 times the energy of the sun at that wavelength. So it's a very bright light. Your regular light bulb is not going to do it.
Do you have to wear glasses when you're...
We don't wear glasses. It actually is therapeutic for the eyes. And in fact, there are studies where this same light, people have done studies looking at the effect on macular degeneration. A gentleman by the name of Graham Mary has done a study where they treated people 90 seconds for 14 days, once a day, holding the light up to their eyes, closed their eyes, and just held it in front of their eyes. And improved their vision. These are people with dry macular degeneration, so their visual acuity is reduced. Improved it by 1 to 2 lines on the eye chart, which is substantial.
Wow. Well, we're going to talk about more about your research in a moment. I do have to remind listeners that you're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. I'm Tom Lujack. Joining us in the studio is Janice Ells, a professor of biomedical sciences at our College of Health Sciences, and with her, Chukwuka Nwamika, the dean of the college. And Dean, your specialty is studying blue light to
yes.
help heal wounds. What's the difference between the blue light and the red light treatment that Janice was just describing?
Yes. The difference is in the wavelengths. The blue light is a shorter wavelength, right about 450, 470 nanometers in wavelength. And the red light is usually somewhere between 620 to close to 700 nanometers in wavelength. The near-infrared rises from 700 to close about 1,000 nanometers in wavelength. So the blue light is shorter, closer to ultraviolet rays. So, and as you know, mankind has used UV light, ultraviolet light, to kill bacteria and kill all sorts of pathogens. And so because blue light is really close to where the UV range lies, blue light tends to have some of those same types of effects. Now, I have also worked with red light and near-infrared light, you know, earlier in my career, and those are used for healing purposes, to make wounds heal, to heal ulcers and so on. Blue light is used for a completely different purpose. It is used to kill bacteria. It has bactericidal effects, so that's what we are doing in our laboratory.
What sort of experiments are you doing to demonstrate the effectiveness of this blue light?
Because other people have shown that certain types of bacteria, such as the bacteria that causes acne, can be killed with blue light, we thought perhaps the primary target should be those bacteria that are resistant to drugs. The most famous one of them is MRSA, M-R-S-A, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. MRSA, as it is known, or sometimes people call it superbug, the superbug is resistant to most antibiotics. And the pharmaceutical industry has been developing stronger and stronger antibiotics to eradicate this form of Staphylococcus. And every time stronger and newer antibiotics come to the market, guess what? The bacteria finds a way to evade some of the mechanisms by which they're killed by the antibiotics.
They're always trying to get one step ahead.
They're always one step ahead. And you have to realize bacteria have been around this planet longer than human beings, so they really know how to avoid and evade some of those therapeutic agents. So, and because of this, we thought this would be, if light can kill MRSA, it would be a revolutionary thing for mankind. It would be a paradigm shift toward a whole new line of therapy that has not been thought of before.
What are the early indications?
So in 2007, we began the experiments and were stunned, really stunned, to see that the bacteria was killed up to 92%, even with very small amounts of blue light. And we repeated those experiments over and over again, and the result was the same. And we tried a 470 nanometers wavelength. The first experiment was done with 405 nanometer wavelength, which is really close to UV. It has a tinge of violet in it. And so you could even claim that maybe it was the UV in it that was causing this. So we moved further away from UV toward the real blue zone, 470 nanometers, which is super blue. We call it super blue. And we found that we got exactly the same result. So it wasn't the UV. It was the blue light that was actually doing this. And again, about 92 to 94% of the bacteria cleared in vitro in a Petri dish in just one shot.
Wow. Yeah. So have you been able to do any of this experiment on human tissue yet?
Not quite yet. We have been experimenting with human fibroblasts in the lab. Human fibroblasts and mixed with the MRSA. But we've been targeting the MRSA itself primarily without doing in vivo experiments in humans. But as you know, if you can actually clear the bacteria from a Petri dish, the chance that you can also clear it from surfaces, from you know places where they hide on the human body, such as the armpit, such as the nasal cavity, and such as those places that stay moist, the groin, and that's those types of things, the chance that you will clear it from those places is also very, very high.
Wow. Yeah. So how far away are you to doing tests to see if this would be an effective treatment against that super bug in people?
Yes. What we're doing now is to make sure that we can, first of all, clear all 100% of the super bug, not just 92%, because if you clear 92, 94%, the remaining ones continue to grow. So we have now come up with some protocol for clearing 100%. And in addition to that, we are now exploring some technology that will enable us to kill 100% of the super bugs at very low doses of the blue light, so that there's no chance whatsoever that normal cells will be damaged in some way or will be at risk
Well, that would be a huge breakthrough, wouldn't it, in this ongoing battle against the bad bugs that we have.
That's correct. That's correct.
How do you deliver the blue light? Janice talked about the instrument made here in Wisconsin. Are you doing the same sort of thing?
Yes. Our instrument is made out of Salt Lake City, Utah, by a company known as Dynatronics, and they are it is LED based, so it's an array of LEDs, light emitting diodes, put in a delivery system that you can then shine on the bacteria.
Wow, that's remarkable. And any hazard using that light, or is it safe to walk around your laboratory without a face mask?
It is absolutely safe. Absolutely safe to walk around in the lab without goggles, without face mask or anything.
Wow, remarkable. Janice, you and Chikuka both work with students, and I'm really, really interested in knowing what their reaction is to the experiments and the research that you're doing. Does it surprise them?
It surprises them very much. When I present this work, and actually when I presented it outside of phototherapy circles, the initial response is very similar to mine, disbelief. And you really have to work hard to convince them that this works. And but then once they're convinced, once they actually do the experiments, a student of mine who just got his PhD and is now on the faculty in nursing, Sandeep Gopalakrishnan, did most of this work that I've been talking about in the animal model of retinitis pigmentosa. And I think it was the first few experiments that convinced him that things worked. I mean, he was doing the treatments and he was like, yeah.
So they're a little wary.
I'm not sure what's going to come out of this, but we're just shining light on this animal and it's going to actually see better. And was quite surprised when it did, and then became quite an advocate for the therapy, and we're continuing to collaborate. So the students get very excited once they start working with it. And peers. I have become a disciple of light. I have Dr. Jerry Lyons, also in my department, is using it on an animal model of multiple sclerosis. And to her amazement, it works to attenuate the severity of the disease. It reduces the severity in this mouse model, which is widely used to test drugs for MS.
You know, I have to admit, until we began talking about doing this program, I never really thought about the fact that light could be so effective, with one exception. Both of my kids, when they were born, had jaundice. And I remember in the hospital, they were put under the special, I don't know what kind of light, but it worked. You know, it got the liver going again.
Right.
Is that same principle at work here in the red and the blue light work that you folks are doing?
To some extent, actually, for the red and the near infrared light, you know, the principle is almost the same. Tom, the way I put this to people is simple. How do you feel when it is summertime, or it is wintertime, or fall or spring, and the sun doesn't show up for 3 or 4 days, it's cloudy, the temperature is fine, so it's not a matter of us feeling cold or feeling warm or anything like that. But how do you feel when the sun doesn't show up? And then turn it around. How do you feel when it is sunny and bright and wonderful and temperature is the same? There is always a difference between when the sun is not shining and when the sun is out there shining bright. People feel excited when the sunlight is out there. People feel like going out to do things. But when it is cloudy and dull, people feel even depressed sometimes.
So that's a great, great reminder that the sun is a powerful agent in our life.
Exactly. Exactly.
What about the medical industry? Are they embracing this? You know, if I'm a pharmaceutical company, I might be a little nervous if a treatment like this might displace the drugs that I'm manufacturing.
I see it as something you could use in addition to pharmaceuticals. And I have a number of colleagues who are in the pharmaceutical industry. And when I talk to them about it, I say what we've seen with light therapy is that it reduces the severity of the disease. We don't actually see a complete cure. It slows it. So what that would mean would be that you could give a lower dose of the drug that you use to treat this disease. You wouldn't have as much toxicity problems. So, in fact, they should embrace it. It's coming along slowly. It doesn't have the same money-making potential as a new drug does. And I think that that slows it in this environment.
Are there a lot of people doing this research around the world?
Yes, mostly outside of the United States. There are some of us here in the U.S. who are actively engaged in doing this. But you have to realize the original research that began to that opened the door was conducted in Hungary by Dr. André Mester, a rheumatologist in one of the medical centers there. And when he first published his work, nobody believed it. And as a matter of fact, you were just asking Dr. Earls about how the medical community react to this. I can tell you, the first time we showed that blue light can kill MRSA, I was actually working with Dr. Deborah Williams, who is an MD, PhD, you know, then we were in New York together, and she was stunned. She couldn't believe it. She raved about it all over the campus, told people it worked, it worked, it worked. And I said, what did you expect? I knew it was going to work. It killed other types of bugs. It can kill this one too.
Maybe because it's such a simple principle.
Yes.
You know, using the source of life, which is the sun and the energy that it produces.
Exactly. And Tom, let me tell our viewers, you know, our listeners, a story. As you know, I was born and raised in Nigeria. And my research has now taken me back to my childhood. And I remember in my childhood that people would go to the streams and rivers to fetch water, drinking water and all that. And when they get there, they do not put their kegs or buckets into the bottom of the river to scoop up the water. They always scooped up water from the surface of the stream or river. Now I can tell you perhaps why they did that. They probably found out over the years or thousands of years that they did this, that it was safer to drink the water from the surface of the river than from the depth of the river. And why? Because the surface is heated by the sun. And so with the sunlight irradiating the surface of the water, so you have the effect, light effect, killing all the bugs on the surface and all that. And they scooped that, took that home, drank or used it for cooking or whatever. And, you know, it was safer to do that. And they did this.
Wow.
So somehow the older civilizations or ancient civilizations over the years learned the value of sunlight, which we are now all, you know, beginning to discover. They didn't know why. They had no explanation for it, but they just knew that it was safer to drink from the surface of the water.
You said something really interesting there, Chukwuka. You said, we're not sure they knew why.
Yes.
Do today we know why it works? The whole notion of light and healing?
Well, for the red light, what we believe, and actually what there's very strong scientific support for, is that the light, it's similar to photosynthesis. Light works on a chloroplast in plant cells to make them grow. Light works on mitochondria, which are very similar to chloroplasts, in mammalian cells, and turns on pathways that protect the cells. So you look at cells that are healthy and they don't have much response to the light. You look at cells that are injured in some way, that have some metabolic challenge or have been, who are sick, and those cells respond to the light and they turn on protective components in the cells. They turn on various pathways that protect the cells. And we're looking to try to elucidate every part of that pathway. Much of this is hypothetical at this particular point.
Well, it's a fascinating topic. We're going to have you back on as you continue to do your research. We'd love to hear the results of some of the work that's going on in the labs at UWM today. Thank you so much.
Thank you very
Thank
much,
you.
Tom.
Chukwuka Enwemeka, the Dean of UWM's College of Health Sciences, and Janice Els, Professor of Biomedical Sciences at the college, our guest on this edition of UWM Today, talking about the power of light, and we can't wait for more of that after the winter we've been through. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.